Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Hey there, fellow true crime aficionados. We're the host of Bad Acts, a true crime podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Aaron.
Join us every Thursday for twisted true crime tales of dark deeds and despicable people. We focus on lesser-known, unique stories with a new case each week. We've covered family annihilators, cannibals, revenge killings, killer kids, mysterious murders, survivor stories, and much more. We've even tackled stories of people who blamed zombies, vampires, ghosts, and voodoo for their bad acts.
Of course, we know they're the only ones to blame. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts, or you can visit our website at badactspod.com.
If you like fresh stories and new perspectives on crime, Bad Acts will be your new jam. Join Bad Acts every Thursday. Stay safe, y'all.
See you soon.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again. I'm Brutal, yeah, Bizarre, always, and Boozy.
Always good to hang out with y'all.
Well, Declan, what story do you have for us today?
I'm going to be talking about Ezekiel Zayas.
Oh, that's a wild name.
Not a great story. Not good at all. Gives me the fucking
Would you
heebies.
Say the last name was?
Zayas. Z-A-Y-A-S.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard that name. So I will be curious. It can't be good because mine is the bizarre story, so.
Yeah, you're not going to like it. I didn't like it.
Okay. Great. My drink to go with my story is called the Yeti. That'll give you a little hint. What might be talking about a little bit. The ingredients are 1.5 ounces of dry gin, 1/2 ounce of citrus liqueur, and then the recipe actually, it didn't specify, but it did say like blue curacao. So I use blue curacao. 3 ounces of lemonade, club soda, and garnish with a lime wedge. The steps are to combine the gin and the lemonade in a highball glass with a few ice cubes. Add the citrus liqueur and top with club soda, stir using a mixing spoon, and then garnish with a lemon wedge. Are you ready.
Yeah, let's give it a try.
I think mine settled. So I don't know if I can give a good feedback on the drink because I'm looking at my drink and there's a line.
Yeah, mine has a line of just soda water, and I think I just got soda water.
It might just be. I don't have a spoon in
That's
here.
It's okay. I mean,
I'll just poke at it.
I wouldn't make it again, but I wouldn't not drink it.
Okay, let's see.
Damn, this Kraken cup is cool.
You did not use blue Curacao.
No.
Because your drink is not blue. But yeah, mine is blue.
Triple sec.
Maybe if I stirred it better, I don't know.
Ugh, it's just like not good.
I taste
it'd be okay, but
is like watered down lemonade and kind of bitterness.
Tastes gross.
Okay. Next week, I'm crossing my fingers. Next week, our drink will be good because this is the third drink
week in a row that sucked.
That our drink has been trash. Ugh, yeah. I'm bummed out. Okay, after recording, I'm going to go make myself a really good cocktail.
Make a good one.
To make up for this bad one.
Yeah.
I've been making cherry sours, cherry bourbon sours.
Ooh, and that sounds good.
Mildly addicted to them. And we figured out that our pasta maker is also a juicer, and it's really easy to juice cherries with it.
Okay. Gets the pit out of there, or you get the pit with it?
No, we have to
cyanide?
Pit it first. Oh, okay. No, we have to pit them first. It would make too much of a mess, I'm sure. Hmm. But it's really, really tasty. So I'm going to go make that afterwards. Make up for this terrible drink. But to go with my terrible drink, I have a not terrible story because this is bizarre and not brutal, so it won't be terrible. Peter Byrne is the topic of discussion. But Peter had a very interesting, I don't want to say obsession, but he had an interest in Bigfoot.
Okay.
Little history about Peter. He was born August 22nd, 1925 in Dublin, Ireland. During World War II, when he was 18 years old, he enlisted in the Royal Air Force. He was stationed at a base in the East Indian Ocean. After the end of the war, he moved to India and then Nepal. He worked as a big game hunter and operated safaris in northern India and Nepal for about 18 years, which is a long time to be doing that. Then he decided to work towards preserving the animals that he had previously hunted. He helped convince the government officials to create a wildlife preserve that eventually became a national park. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And just shows that he was, you know, pretty interested in that kind of wildlife and things like that. He was known for his wildlife work and was contacted by an American man named Tom Slick. Tom hired Peter to conduct a two-year-long search trying to find the infamous Yeti that was believed to have lived in the Himalayan mountain range. Peter didn't find the Yeti, but Tom was still interested in finding strange animals. So he convinced Peter to come to the U.S. and search for Bigfoot, which is where...
Is this the famous picture?
No, it's okay. Not.
Because isn't that guy's name Peter too?
I don't think so. I don't remember. You're talking about the video from the 60s that was in California?
Yeah.
No, I didn't hear any mention of this
Patterson gentleman. Gimlin. Okay.
Patterson, it's close to Peter. Yeah, this Peter was actually pretty well respected in the Bigfoot community because he tried to do things more scientifically and not dress a man up in a monkey suit and parade him around in the forest. Allegedly. Anyway, the Bigfoot search centered mostly in the Pacific Northwest, and Peter moved to Oregon. This endeavor proved to be a new interest for Peter, and he founded the Bigfoot Information Center in the Dalles, Oregon, in 1975.
Interesting.
I did not know there was such a thing.
Me?
I think it's moved, but... The center was tasked with gathering eyewitness accounts, casts, and exhibits surrounding Bigfoot. He and three other Bigfoot researchers were given the nickname the Four Horsemen of Sasquatchery.
Jesus Christ.
Never heard that term before. It makes me giggle. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Sasquatchery. Regardless, in doing his research for Bigfoot, he learned about a lot of Native American Bigfoot legends, and he had a more scientific approach to his research, which gained him respect from the scientific community. Basically, he wasn't just out there running around saying every weird imprint in the ground was a Bigfoot footprint. He wasn't, you know, yelling about hearing knocking sounds. He was really trying to approach finding Bigfoot in a scientific manner. So he didn't sound like a kook, and people respected him.
Okay.
Peter often heard stories about Bigfoot sightings, and he was critical about each story. Unfortunately for him, he often heard stories that seemed full of lies and less than reliable sources. But in the mid-1970s, he heard a particularly interesting and seemingly credible story from two men. These men were biologists who worked for the U.S. Forest Service. One day they were working in a forest in the Pacific Northwest and saw a strange tall figure moving through the woods near them. They described the figure as tall and hairy and showed Peter where they saw the mysterious figure. Peter inspected the area and noticed some hair with a portion of skin attached to it, stuck to the bark of a tree, few feet off of the ground. He retrieved the sample for testing. Being the 1970s, DNA testing of hair and skin wasn't a thing. That was before any kind of testing was even dreamt of. But Peter sent his sample to what some might think an unlikely source. He sent it to the FBI. Again.
Okay.
Giggles. He asked them to help prove the origin of the sample. In his letter accompanying the sample, he stated, quote, "We do not often come across hair, which we are unable to identify, and the hair that we have now, about 15 hairs attached to a tiny piece of skin, is the first we have obtained in 6 years since we have, which we feel may be of importance," end quote. He explained in his letter who he was, that he worked for, you know, that he was associated with the Institute of Bigfoot hunting and all that kind of stuff, and hoped that the FBI would take him seriously. You might be wondering, as I was, why he sent the sample to the FBI, since it's not a crime to find hair to and be skin Bigfoot. It's also not a crime to be Bigfoot. And the FBI, their primary objective is to investigate crimes, not Bigfoot sightings and unidentified hair. They're looking for crimes. Even in the 70s, they were looking for crimes. Around that time, there was an article published claiming that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had submitted an unknown hair sample to the FBI. And the FBI, in this article, stated they could not confirm the origin of the hair sample. The article stated that the hair sample was found to belong to no known animal.
How do they know without DNA testing, though?
Well, great question.
Do they still have the sample? Can they DNA test it now?
No.
Huh.
Here's the problem. Readers who read this article that were big into it, that loved Bigfoot, were like, oh my gosh, they found something that couldn't be identified to any known animal. Therefore, it must be Bigfoot. And so everybody's sending shit to the FBI and they're like, we don't know anything about this. The FBI documents couldn't identify where this supposed lab testing of this unknown hair source came from. They had no record of it. They were just like, we don't have any documentation of the Army Corps of Engineers sending us anything or us inspecting anything for any reason. That's so it was all weird. Yes. According to the FBI documents and the assistant director of the FBI at the time, no such request for any testing had been conducted by the FBI. But the FBI agreed to test the sample that Peter had sent in. But again, they're not testing for DNA because that wasn't a thing. What they did was the lab looked at the hairs and the tissue microscopically and compared it to known sources. They determined, based on all that examination, that the hairs belonged to an animal of the deer family. So it was not Bigfoot.
Makes sense.
According to the FBI files, a letter stating this information was sent to Peter in 1977, and the sample was returned to him. However, Peter never received it, didn't get the letter, didn't get the sample back, and he didn't even know the results of the testing until decades later when the FBI released the files publicly. Of course, he was disappointed, as I'm sure the entire Bigfoot hunting, searching community was. But that was the time that the FBI conducted research on Bigfoot. And they said it was a deer.
Weird. Definitely in the bizarre category.
I never knew the FBI had anything to do with Bigfoot, but apparently they did.
I'd be interested to... I mean, it's definitely not Bigfoot hair, but I'd be interested to see what DNA testing said.
What it was. Yeah. Now we could do it.
Yeah.
Not back then. And the sample's gone. Nobody has it.
They probably got that shit and threw it out immediately. They probably didn't even test it. They're like, this fucking crazy guy. The Institute of Bigfoot? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Tell us about this bad person that you have a story on.
Okay. I don't like this story at all. Just letting you know. Just a preface.
Okay. Great.
So
I'm sure I'll love it then.
There's not a lot out there about Ezekiel Zayas before 2019. No social media.
Oh, this is new.
Anything. Yeah.
Okay.
He's just another face in the crowd. But what we do know is that he had been born and raised in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Somewhere along the way, he made it to Hawaii, and it was there that his descent into darkness began to manifest in truly bizarre and terrifying ways.
I don't like it.
Court documents and later interviews would reveal that Zayas had a history of mental illness. At times, he reportedly adhered to treatments and medications, and at those times, by all accounts, he was functional, polite, and even articulate. But when he stopped taking the medication, things took a turn. It wasn't just a person suffering from depression or anxiety. This was something deeper. He was diagnosed with psychosis, delusions, obsessions, and paranoia.
That's not a good combination.
Yeah. So back in July 2019 in Honolulu, Hawaii, a military family had returned home after spending time away. And when they opened the door, things were weird.
Oh.
Some of their belongings had been moved. Food had been eaten. Clothes from their closet were missing. And at first it looked like a simple burglary, but it got even weirder.
No.
They noticed a note, handwritten, cryptic, and disturbing. They found a video on a device in their home. In the footage, a man later identified as Ezekiel Zayas talked in depth about his plans to perform medical procedures on the family. Surgical procedures.
No. No.
He spoke with eerie calm as if he had truly believed he was a doctor or a scientist. The man had not only broken into their house, he had lived there for days, wearing their clothes, eating their food, sleeping in their beds, and they had been inside the house when he was still there. He was hiding in a crawl space.
No. Oh, I hate it.
So this is called frogging. P-H.
Yes.
Frogging.
Hate it.
Refers to people who secretly live inside someone else's home without them knowing. It's often romanticized online in urban legends, but in reality, it's far more sinister. And Zayas took it to terrifying extremes. When police arrested him, they charged him with burglary and criminal trespassing, among other offenses. But as investigators looked deeper, what they found hinted at something more dangerous than a voyeur or a squatter. They found journals, diagrams, surgical plans, and references to treatments he wanted to perform, some involving removing organs.
Of course.
Others involving injecting substances.
No.
This entire tone suggested medical delusions possibly tied to paranoid schizophrenia. The military family was traumatized and Zayas was arrested. But here's the kicker. He was eventually found mentally unfit to stand trial and was then placed into a mental health diversion program. That decision would have deadly consequences later.
No, no.
Fast forward to 2020, the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Zayas was now housed in the Oahu Community Correction Center, a local jail where conditions were, like many other jails, overcrowded and under-monitored. He wasn't in solitary confinement, and he wasn't even in a mental health unit. Instead, despite his previous charges and documented mental health issues, he was placed in a shared cell with another inmate, 62-year-old man named Vance Grace. Grace wasn't in for violent crime. He had been arrested for violating pandemic quarantine rules.
Oh.
That's, yeah, he was in jail for fucking hanging out with too many people at a party and not social distancing or something. The two were assigned to the same cell, even though Zayas had documented psychiatric issues. On August 1st, 2020, during quarantine or during routine lockdown, Zayas attacked Grace. Reports say that Grace was just lying down asleep when the assault began. Zayas beat him, slammed his head against the floor, and then stomped on his head. The force was so severe it caused blunt force trauma to the skull. Guards found Grace bleeding and unresponsive. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Zayas reportedly showed no remorse and there was no documented motive. He didn't claim self-defense. He just said he had no reason at all. Wow. The murder sent shockwaves through Hawaii's legal corrections community. Like, how the fuck did he end up there? He should be in a mental health ward in a padded room with a straight jacket on.
Can confirm.
Yeah.
I hate it.
In August 2023, 3 years after the murder, Ezekiel Zayas pled guilty to manslaughter, not murder.
No.
As well as charges from his earlier crimes. At sentencing, the judge was firm. Zayas was to serve 40 years total, 20 for the manslaughter, 10 for the burglary, 5 for the burglary in the second, and 5 for assault. They were not consecutively.
No.
Yeah. So he will be getting out in 40 years.
Wow. I don't like it. How old is this guy?
He's in his 20s. The fact that you went to jail because you violated COVID regulations and then get murdered by a crazy fucking crazy guy.
I don't like lawsuits. Don't get
That's
me wrong.
Gotta be a fat one though.
But his family, I hope, is looking for some kind of somebody to pay something for that. I'm not the one in the family who runs around and yells about lawsuits and suing everybody and their dog. But somebody should be held accountable for that.
Yeah. Yeah, they need millions of dollars.
I hate it. Make it better and give me a good chaser, because that's just awful.
You go with the chaser. I gotta find mine.
Okay. My chaser is that Dexter Resurrection has started on Paramount Plus. And we've only seen the first episode at this point because we're doing it as a watch party with our friends. Shout out to our friends. You know who you are. And I love it already. It's great. I've loved everything that has been Dexter, even the ones that others haven't cared for as much. But I just love the Dexter universe as a whole. And I'm very excited to see what they have coming.
Yeah, it sounds lots of fun. Super interesting. I like the first one, the first show. I haven't watched the other ones though.
I've watched them all.
So my chaser is a 3-year-old boy finds a $4 million pendant in England.
What?
Yeah. So did he treasure keep hunter. The money? Not
I hope
sure.
He gets to keep the money.
So a kid and his dad were playing around with a metal detector, and they found a 500-year-old pendant, which experts say is worth about $4 million.
Wow.
They just found it in a field. Okay,
that's so cool.
BBC reports say that they found it in a field and they'll share the money with the field's owner if the pendant is sold.
Oh, that's
cool. The British Museum
says
a pendant weighs a third of an ounce and has a gold senate of about 73%. And it's engraved with an image of the Virgin Mary.
Wow.
So that's...
that's cool.
That's a pretty fucking cool find.
Yeah, it is. I like it.
The fact that it was just sitting in a field, that's crazy.
I know. It's amazing.
Wow. It like boggles my mind that people can just find stuff like that. Like,
I know,
old ancient coins and shit like that. And like,
I can see why some people get super interested in using metal detectors and finding, you know, trying to find lost gold and, you know,
well,
or
even
whatever.
If you find like, even if you find like a gold necklace, like that's still worth money and you just found it for free, like digging through sand in the beach or something.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I just don't know that I could get obsessed with it like some people do.
I couldn't. I mean,
yeah,
I could see doing it on the beach maybe, but there was when I was in elementary school, they would let just this old dude come and metal detect while we're on recess. I'm like, why is this guy here? What the fuck is that? Yeah.
Dude needs to be there outside of school hours.
Go on the weekend. He was there multiple times. It's like, you can only scour this field so many times, dummy. Like,
yeah.
I remember seeing there during our recess time, like,
was that at Roosevelt?
Probably 10 times. Yeah. At Roosevelt.
Oh, that's crazy town.
Yeah. It weirded me out. I didn't like that he was there.
Not okay. Not okay.
Yeah. Well, I think that wraps up today's shorter episode.
Yes, I believe it does.
Thanks for joining us once again, everybody. Stuff. Hanging out with us, getting drunk with us, listening to scary stories.
Well, you're not getting drunk off this drink because it was garbage.
It was gross. Yeah. I didn't even finish it.
I'm going to go make my cherry sour now so that I can at least have a good cocktail today.
Sounds way better.
Yes.
What's in it?
It's cherry juice. So it's 2 ounces of bourbon, 1 ounce of cherry juice, 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup, and 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice. And all mixed together.
That sounds
and
good.
It's delicious. It's delicious.
Yeah, right now during cherry season too. It sounds pretty good.
It's perfect, yeah. And if you don't have a juicer or you don't want to use like canned cherry juice, you can just throw the cherries in a shaker and muddle them, and you don't even have to worry about the pits. It takes about 7 or 8 good-sized cherries, and you just muddle the hell out of them and then mix everything together, shake it all together, and then strain it out. And
that sounds good.
It's great that way, too.
Try that.
I only use the juicer because I wanted to use a lot of cherries and not have to muddle them every time I wanted another drink. So we just, and I made it for the party that we went to last weekend, and everybody loved it.
Nice. I'm sure they did. Sounds really good.
It's yummy and worth muddling cherries for sure.
All righty. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.